Hello everyone, and thank you for joining Sigmund Software in our webinar series. My name is Ramona Briganti. I am a clinical social worker and project manager professional, and I am honored to have on the webinar today with me John Hollis from Rockers in Recovery, and we will be discussing addiction awareness and education, a grassroots look at getting the word out. Good morning, John, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Any day I'm above dirt is a good day, and I'm glad that I was invited.
So can you tell our listeners a little bit about Rockers in Recovery?
Rockers in Recovery was the brainchild of myself and Lori Sullivan, and it started in 2008, and it really is all about addiction recovery media. And the information at Rockers in Recovery is really based on the love of music and evidence-based approaches to drug addiction recovery. And, you know, making it awareness and prevention and education combined with music. Back in 2008, we were the only ones that were actually doing that. So we're not a treatment program. We're not an advocacy group. Our sole purpose is to provide prevention, awareness, and education information to anyone who suffers with drug addiction or alcoholism. And of course, we do it again through our media platforms using the following: music, you know, education, information, awareness, and of course, our recovery partners that make that happen on the media platforms.
Yeah, and you do have a lot of internet radio shows. I did have the pleasure of listening to some of the new ones that you have started, Waking Up Blessed, which talks a little bit more, at least in the beginning, about your personal story. I definitely encourage the listeners to check out your website. We'll have links and so on throughout the webinar today, but to listen to your story and your interviews with other providers. But What makes Rockers in Recovery important to you? What makes the giving back of so much of your time and yourself important? And how is that helpful for your continued recovery?
Well, you see, it's funny. In 2004, again, you know, there's the backstory to it. You know, in 2004, I was sitting in a hotel room and my office in Indianapolis, Indiana. And I was, you know, an avid rock and roller, and I was far from anything in recovery, but I was totally, totally a rocker. And one of my favorite artists was Eric Clapton, and I followed him a lot, especially online. And 2004, I was searching, and I was high, and I was all messed up, and I was sitting in my office, and I was searching just songs to listen to while I was working. And up came his message of hope that he had, you know, pretty much recorded on his website called Crossroads of Antigua, which is a treatment center that he helped open. And I listened to it, and I was like blown away that here's a guy that I knew exactly where he came from, especially with his addictions, that he was like clean, and he had been clean since 87, and he was working a program, and he was doing all of these things. And I was just like, just totally blown away. And fast forward, that message resonated with me, but it didn't really take hold until 2006. And, you know, that's where my journey began. And when I started to listen to his stuff over and over again, it really planted that seed. And what it did for me was, when I had the phone call from a local radio station in Boca Raton, Florida, a couple of years into my recovery, and they asked me, hey, listen, they had heard me on another show, and they said, hey, listen, would you like to produce your own show here? And I went in, and really what it was is they wanted me to buy airtime and produce a show under their house, and I did it. But one of the things that occurred for me was, we came up with Rockers in Recovery, and it wasn't so much, everybody has the misconception that Rockers in Recovery is about, you know, rock and roll stars that are in recovery. Now, Rockers in Recovery was just, like I said, I'm a rocker. I was using in 2004 and 2006. I wasn't using 2007, 2008 when we started Rockers in Recovery. I was a rocker, now in recovery. So I was able to go to, you know, listen to music and hear music and, you know, all of these different things. And music totally did something different for me. It gave me hope. There was a message behind the music. I found different music that I used to listen to when I was getting high was no longer the same message that I was getting through that. I would get really, really inspired, you know, by some of the music that I used to listen to. It had a totally different meaning. So being a rocker in recovery, I wanted to spread the message of hope that, hey, listen, it's possible. I don't care if you're somebody out there that's suffering or you're a family member or however that may be as far as the end game, which means that, you know, if you're a user or if you're a family member, we all need hope. So how can we get that hope? Well, that hope and all of that comes through music. So as a rocker in recovery, I was able to start developing different platforms and different ways of being able to put music and education and all of those things together. So we would invite on different people that were in recovery, if they be in the music business or not. And we would share about our experiences and our feelings behind music and what music did for us and play some songs and do those things. And it was really, really at that point, we had no clue what we were doing. Really, to be quite frank, we had no clue where it was going to go. We had no clue what the mission statement was. We were just doing it. And when we made the contract with Beasley Broadcasting, when we made the contract with Beasley Broadcasting, it was an $80,000 a year contract. And me and Lori had no clue where that money was going to come from. But we made the decision to do it. And we went out and started beating the bushes and getting sponsors. And, you know, we got through the first year and we had paid the bill. And that was 10 years ago. You know, that was 2008. At the end of 2008, we started to develop other stuff because, you know, something, it's about carrying that message. It really is about giving hope and letting people know that there is life after recovery. You can be a rocker in recovery, but it was just now on the FM dial, so or on the AM dial. So now we had to start like tracking it. Well, really, you know, I had people asking me, well, how many listeners do you have? Well, you know something, a lot of AM dials, they can tell you, but they don't really know unless they're in Nelson or Nielsen's. And even then, you know, it's speculative. So what we did was we hooked up to Blog Talk Radio and all of our live shows started to play on Blog Talk Radio. So not only were we live on the AM dial and on a 50,000 watt station, but we were also streaming all of those to a podcaster through Blog Talk Radio. So every one of our episodes were literally going out through that, carrying the message that way too. So this is in 2009. So a lot of the things that we were developing and we were doing were like, you know, I had people asking me, what's a podcast? You know, what's a stream? You know, this was 2008, right. 2009. They had no clue what these things were. So, and then the next phase of the development for us to carry that message out there and get it out there and let people know, again, this is all about just hammering home to people that, hey, listen, there's life after addiction. Mm-hmm. You can get clean. You can get sober. You can have a good life. And things that used to be a deterrence can now be an enhancer. And that's where, you know, for me, the music came in. But it was funny because I had, in 2010, I had the opportunity, I got a phone call from, through this process, by the way, Crossroads Center of Antigua started sponsoring our show. And one of the coolest things about that was I got a phone call from Kim Martin asking, if I wanted to go to the Crossroads Guitar Festival.
I love Kim. I had the pleasure of working with her also. She's awesome.
Yeah, she's a great lady, great lady. So she had called me and said, "Hey, listen, you want to go to the Crossroads Guitar Festival in 2010 and interview some people and do a live show?" And I was like, "Absolutely." So I went. It was the most incredible experience of my life because here I am in 2010 sitting at the Crossroads Guitar Festival interviewing people. And it was, for me, you had, like Bill Murray and, just some of those guys. And then you had, Sheryl Crow there. You had the Allman Brothers Band Without Greg. You had a bunch of different folks that were there, and not all of them were in recovery. And some were in recovery, and I think Ronnie Wood was there. And Ronnie Wood at that time, and he talks about his own recovery, he had like 3 months. So Ronnie Wood standing there with 3 months is a miracle. And anytime you talk about music, so here we were, in Chicago, we're doing this event, and it hit me that if you take music and recover and you put it together and you went out on the road with it, that was more to raise money for Crossroads. The concept came to me that if we take the media aspect of what Rockers in Recovery is doing, with all of the platforms that we're doing it on, maybe through Facebook and social media and all our social media platforms, which now, back then, I think we reached 3, now we're reaching millions. But the cool part was that as we started to develop this and we got to Chicago, and I seen the message unfold in front of me, and it didn't matter if it was a person supporting the recovery message that Clapton was putting out, or if it was somebody in recovery themselves up there playing, they were really there to jam out and to help support the recovery message in Antigua. And I thought to myself, wouldn't it be kind of cool to be able to take that same concept and do a concert and have education, prevention awareness, advocacy groups, have all of those people all in one place and have music as out in front where we can, have education and prevention and all those things and awareness. But the music is what people are really coming for. So the concept really was in 2000, June, July of 2010 came into my brain. And I'm one of those guys, and when I get a concept, I just like, play with it and play with it and play with it. And it was like August, or I'm sorry, December of 2010 that I said, at this point, we need to do a concert. I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning and I was eating ice cream and watching TV. And I remember saying to myself, "Hey, listen, it's time to do a concert." And I just got on fire for this. And I can tell you, it was December the 10th of 2010. And I was like, "Wow, this is going to be great." We had been interviewing, folks like Richie Supa and Ricky Bird and Liberty DeVito, and there was a bunch of other guys that we had been interviewing on the media platform. So, made some phone calls to different people, Bruce Duncan, Johnny Burke. These guys were all like local musicians in the Pompano Beach area, and I started making some phone calls. Rhetoric Bands, Keep Coming Back Band. I mean, there was a bunch of different bands that we contacted and said, "Hey, listen, we're thinking about putting this thing on. Would you guys be interested?" They were like, "Wow, what a concept!" So they were like, "Yeah, we're in." So the next thing I had called Ricky Bird. He used to be with Joan Jett and Blackhearts, and I said, "Ricky, this is what we're doing." And he said, "Yeah, hey, listen, I can come down, but there was a a cost factor in it." So we had to raise money to be able to, bring Ricky down, pay him, pay, for lodging and all of that stuff, and also build everything around it. We had Richie Supa come and actually donate his time for the first one. It was really kind of a cool experience. So what happened was through this process of putting this all together, this was December 10th, and I'm making these phone calls December 11th and all of that. I start making phone calls to get sponsorship. Hey, listen, you know, would you like to sponsor this? Now, you got to remember, this is my baby. So everybody in the world should be, you know, throwing dollars at me because it's the best experience in the world. It's going to be great.
Right.
And that wasn't the case at all. People were like, you're out of your mind. How's that put heads in our beds? Mm-hmm. I mean, this was the experiences that I was getting. I was getting things like, well, you know something, that's all well and great, but how does that put a head in my bed and you know, I'm putting money out, I want to see money come back. I'm like, you know, something. It was really sickening to me to hear some of the treatment programs and how they looked at a person in treatment. It just made me sick. But in the meantime, God has, you know, you make plans and God, listen, if they're truly supposed to happen, they'll take place. And I will tell you that it was December 16th that I was on the air with a friend of mine, Robert Gluck, who's an attorney in South Florida. And we were talking about legal issues on Rockers and Recovery Radio. And we were discussing some things. And, you know, and the next thing you know, I got a phone call while I was on a commercial from my aunt that my dad had passed away. Well, here, hence, that all comes together because through that, my dad left an inheritance that through that inheritance, we not only paid for the first Love of Recovery Festival, which was the weekend of February 12th of 2011, which was Valentine's Day, and Lori came up with the concept of naming it Love of Recovery Festival, and we literally paid for it through my dad's inheritance, and paid for everything. I think the whole total came out to like $25,000 or $30,000. We had a full concert production. It was amazing, and we live streamed it. So here's the funny part: not only was it streaming on the radio and streaming on Blog Talk Radio, but we came up with this concept that we could actually do live stream through Ustream TV. They had just came out. So we did a four camera shoot in 2011 for the first event and streamed it live. You could watch it right on all of the social media. Now, it wasn't like, you know, Facebook years later comes out with Facebook Live, but back then you would have to click on it and you could go to the show and watch it live. And we did that for the first year, 2011 into 2012, we produced our first four shows, live shows, bringing awareness, prevention, education, and music together. And the way it worked was real simple. We would have the bands open up, and then in between changeovers of the band, we would have up an advocacy speaker or an educational speaker or somebody talking about awareness. We've had people from like Tom Corder from, used to be with the White House, from SAMHSA. We've had other folks from SAMHSA that were involved. We've had other advocacy groups, like, you know, back in 2000, and I think it was 15, we had Michael DeLeon. He was just really starting to, you know, get his feet into the advocacy end of it. You know, just this past, our last one, which was in November, was our 29th musical production across the United States since 2011. We had Tim Ryan and other speakers there. But the concept of this was to let people know in the area that in between those bands, you're here for the music and you're hanging out. We're really having fun. But the concept was that if you were a person in the community, that's the person we wanted to speak to. See, it's real simple to throw a recovery concert. Listen, they had the 12-step music fest down in the Keys back in, you know, 2009, 2010, and all of that. And it was all really based around people in recovery going to this event. That's not what we're looking to do. What we're looking to do is find the person out there that's hurting, come listen to some music, and we can give you some information on how to help your loved one. We can give you some information on how you might want to get help. But it's about educating the community with awareness and prevention and love through music. because music is the common denominator. It is the language of the heart. It brings people together. It doesn't separate people. Mm-hmm. So through that process, here we, you know, go up to 2018, you know, we're 10 years of doing this, and the whole concept of the concerts and the festivals and the meet and greets, we would do meet and greets the night before where we would have keynote speakers and a full sit-down dinner, and it was free to the community. We were doing all of this, and we were wrapping it all around sponsorship. And we started to see that in 2016, 17, and 18, that the sponsorships, people really weren't interested in doing this. And they got littler and littler and littler, and to the point where me and Lori were pretty much the whole time, I think there was one festival that actually broke even through that time period. We pretty much put the money in to cover it through the way. And we got to the point where just this past year, we had to make a decision. 2017, we did a show in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. We did a show the year before up in Maine. And it just got to the point where we were putting all of this, you know, huge, huge production out there and marketing it and putting it out there. And we would have people in the recovery communities, you know, talking about, well, you can't go to that. You're breaking anonymity. How are we breaking anonymity? Listen, first of all, I don't say I'm a part of any 12-step organization. I'm a member or I'm not. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that it's endorsed by any 12-step organization. And as long as I'm not doing those things, then guess what? You know, we're not breaking any traditions on the 12-step aspect of it. But the other part of it is, too, is that getting the community behind it. I'm talking about the community, not the recovery community, the community itself. Mm-hmm. Difficult thing to do. So you try to use media. We pretty much created our own media outreach because, you know, our stuff is reaching, you know, 2-3 million people. And, you know, 200,000-300,000 engagements a month, or 200,000-300,000 engagements a month, you know, sounds like a lot. And it is, especially if you're doing, you know, target marketing areas for events. But again, you know, we didn't have the support in the thing. So here we are, 29 concerts and festivals and meet and greet productions into this thing. And we had to make a decision that 2018, we were going to go back to what our roots were. And it's very simple, you know, Rockers in Recovery Media. We're addiction media. And what we do is we put out all of those same things that we were putting out years ago, but we combine them all together with messages of thoughts for today, to Waking Up Blessed, the new radio show, to old shows like Music in Recovery. We produce we produce four radio shows off of the platforms, but we also, if you go to like Rockers and Recovery on Facebook, it's about updating each day with information that's newsworthy, to funny stuff, to old music that might inspire somebody, some old rockers that are out there and they're carrying a message to a person that isn't in recovery. That is a music artist that's supporting the recovery movement. So all of these things really have come together and rested now on the fact that we've been a media company since 2008. Yes, we had a great run of great festivals and meet and greets and all of those things, but the real core has always been getting up every morning and doing Rockers in Recovery Media and putting the media information out there worldwide on the web at our rockersinrecovery.com site, to doing it directly through all of our social media outlets, our biggest one being Facebook at Rockers in Recovery. You know, over the years, if you had told me that in 2008, when we first started the Facebook page, it was at the end of the 2008, beginning of 2009 that we started the Facebook page. you know, we had started at the beginning part of 2008, but now this Facebook thing was out there. And there was a bunch of organizations, by the way, that were starting to do their own like social media platforms for recovery. And I thought to myself at that point, hey, listen, you, we could do that. And we actually started a little site and we were starting to do it. But I started to see that, you know, Zuckerberg had the idea. And I should probably hitch my wagon to what they're doing. And let me just open a page and make it a community. And it was the best thing I ever did, because really in real time, I get to the potential, especially it's changed a little bit now, but back in the day, you had the potential of reaching, you know, millions upon millions of people. Now they've changed a lot of that, but yes, we still reach a bunch of people because, listen, we went from, you know, I remember when we hit 1,200 people, we were like, oh my God, we got 1,200 people on our page. That's amazing. You know, we were just like, wow. And fast forward, you know, we're at 137,000 followers, getting ready to go to 138,000 followers. If you had told me this, I would have told you you're out of your mind. God does for me, and you know, sometimes there's a lot of people out there, man, that will have their, you know, say about my spiritual beliefs. But I know beyond the shadow of a doubt that God has covered my butt. And in reality of everything that I had gone through in 2013, we had rented the Revolution Live, and we were doing a concert for the first time. It was combining the Broward County Sheriff's Department with Special Olympics and also Rockers in Recovery. And we put this thing on, this event on, and Rockers in Recovery rented Revolution Live in Fort Lauderdale and turned it into a non-alcoholic gig, a club for the night, and combined the message of hope with the community using Special Olympics to be able to promote awareness for Special Olympics and raise money for them. And during that show, I had, at the end of the show, I was coming down off of the walkway off the stage with a box, and I fell off the edge of the runway and twisted my ankle. And you got to remember that as an addict, I was, you know, a drunk, and I was a huge cocaine addict before I got sober. And so I got clean in 2006, and that was 2006, December 2006. And it is now 2013, and I'm coming off this gangplank and, you know, coming off the stage, rolling a box, and I twist my ankle, and I ended up taking a few Percocets in 2013, wanting to kill the pain of my ankle. And in my thought process was, well, hey, listen, you know, something was given to me by a doctor. It's no big deal. I can, you know, I can do this. It's, you know, it isn't like I'm drinking. This is the kind of stuff that my brain was telling me. Now, through this process, I was going to meetings. I was doing all of those things. At the same time, I didn't realize it, but I was dealing with untreated diabetes. I didn't even know it. I found that out later on when I had to go into detox because of the opioid use. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that happened for me through that was I found out quickly who my friends were and who they weren't. I had people take to social media talking about my relapse on opioids and how I was, you know, a piece of garbage. And I mean, it was just a really horrifying situation during that time period. But here's, hey, listen, you know, something through that time period, I did a lot of things that you probably should never, ever do. You know, I really walked away from the whole Rockers and Recovery thing. Lori and Paul and some other people took it over, Paul Wilson. And I just kind of, you know, stayed away. And it was like 2000 and through that time period, it was really 2013 into 2014. was really, really a bad situation because I had people telling me at first, when it first came to me, you know, picking up the substance, they were like, listen, you're going to be okay. Don't worry about it. Just keep moving forward. And I couldn't turn the ship around. I was really having a hard time. I was back struggling. You know what I mean? I would get together a month, 2 months, 3 months, go back out. It was really, really horrifying. 2013 for me and for Rockers in Recovery, the one thing that I had created to help others was now really turning around to kill me. And I mean, it was just a really, really horrifying situation. 2013 into 2014. 2015, and it was June the 15th of 2015. I came out of a hotel room after my last use, and I was, I had gotten another inheritance from my grandmother, and I had used some of the money to help Lori pay for. Lori was working with the Rockers and Recovery thing. I gave her some money to pay for a show that they were producing in New Jersey. There were some other shows that we were looking to produce, and we had to cancel them, and, you know, all because of my addiction. And in the meantime, at that point I took, I don't know, it was like $45,000 and went into a hotel room and was literally at the point where I said to myself, okay, I don't want to come out of this. I'm done. I don't want to live. And I'm going to go out. I'm going to go out this way. And I went through $45,000 in a month and a half and walked out of a hotel room in 2015 alive and really pissed off. So here I was in a situation where, you know, any human being should die after this, and I'm not dead yet. And somebody pointed out to me in a very kind way, hey John, you know, maybe you're not meant to die, and you need to, you know, pull your stuff together and do what you need to do and get back on the horse. And I had a guy named Nick C who reached out to me, and I went and visited him up in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. And we really, really, he came behind me and he said, listen, I really believe in what you're doing. And I believe that you're turning your life around, and I believe in you. And I hadn't had that in a long, long time, a couple of years. And every time I wanted to use, I thought to myself, wow, you know, something, Nick's standing behind me and I can't disappoint him. I hadn't gotten to the point where it was about disappointing me.
Right.
It was about, you know, but that's what kept me holding on.
Yeah.
So through the process, we went to Maine in 2016, did a show there, and continued doing the radio stuff. I didn't get on the air. I was doing like little stuff. I would do like interviews for Treatment and Recovery, and really I was just the interviewer. I didn't give or talk about my thought process, because really, you know, who am I to say anything, you know, with a month or two or 10 months or a year clean. I just really got on, asked questions, and got off. I did not, you know, pontificate on my thought process. And it was this past January that I was like, okay, God, where do you want me to go next? I was talking with people, and, you know, been clean now since 2015. So what do you want me to do? The music end of this thing is ending, the on the road concert stuff. Where do you want me to go? Mm-hmm. And it was very simple. Go back to your roots. You know, today you're waking up blessed.
Yeah, it seems like everything started with your, you know, finding Eric Clapton online and his message. And though you were not able to hear it then, that was the seed. And you've built this whole Rockers in Recovery with Lori and with Paul Wilson and, you know, the other support people that you have to kind of provide that to somebody else, you know, whether you're reaching them through Facebook or when you had the events, you're trying to be that little hope, that little seed for other people. And though, you know, I know that, you know, the relapse was definitely a step back and, you know, you coming back, that's all genuine. That's all real. You know, I mean, through my own experience in my family with addiction, which I know I've talked to you about, I see the two steps forward, one step back, but it's the coming back that is always the most, it's the most healing to see. People that have gone so far and coming back and still fighting, that's where the power is. And that's where I see the hope, you know? So,
well, here's part of the problem. Here's part of the problem. And it's a good, it's become an asset. See, recovery for me today is the bedrock, all of that stuff that is the bedrock of the new foundation of my recovery today. So, that being said, you listen, you know, in addiction, you injure a lot of people and you harm a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, doing the best I can each day to make amends and contact people and do those things. And my sponsor told me, hey, listen, you know something, you put it out there and you leave it up to God. However, that's going to work itself out. It's going to present itself exactly when it's supposed to present itself. And it has over the years. Where over the last few years, where, you know, those amends processes take place, and reaching out to people. But most importantly, what I found is through this is that there's a stigma within the rooms. You know, there's bad stigma from the general public to begin with on how bad an addict is. You know, but it really gets really bad when you're, you know, being in a recovery community and they look at a chronic relapser or a relapser as somebody that you should stay away from. You know, when you have people saying, stay away from him, he's using. And listen, I was clean for a year and they were still talking about that I was still using. So again,
those people probably need the most hope. You know,
yeah, and here's the reality.
Not feeling a community in the recovery community.
Correct, man. It's almost like being a leopard amongst leopards, you know, at that point. So once I really got my footing back, one of the things that started to happen with me was I had, and it's really a bad thing because one, if you look at people with long-term recovery, you get a guy with 7, 8, 9, 10 years or 20 years or 25 years or 30 years. And they go out. It's a hard time getting back because your ego and your pride are getting in the way. And it's no help if you have all the mumblings going on in the background. So the reality is that today, by the grace of God, I get those phone calls. Hey, John, listen, you know, I had 20 years and I just went out. What should I do to get back? I'm really having a hard time. Every time I walk into a room, I think everybody's talking about me. I mean, these are like insane thoughts. And guess what? Some might, but 9 times out of 10 is your own brain telling you that.
Right.
Because your own guilt and shame and remorse and all of that. So the reality is that God gave me a new purpose through this whole thing. The other thing is that I found and I seen firsthand the power behind the opioid crisis and the whole opioid overdoses that are going on across this country, 174 a day. Now, the amazing part, in 2009, we had a radio show on Rockers in Recovery about, you know, people finding opioids in their medicine cabinets and how children were becoming addicted because of, you know, the pharmaceutical companies that were pumping them up. If you got a sprained ankle, you got an oxy. If you got, you know what I mean? If you injured your finger playing baseball, they gave you an oxy. So, you know, they had really, when we did that show in 2009, we had really, you know, talked about at that point, not even being somebody that had that problem, I understood the concept because, you know, I had my own addiction. So I knew, you know, the addictive personality and the addictive gene, I understood all of that, you know. But one of the things that I really look back at is that until I had to go through that myself and seen what it did and how it opened it up and brought me right back to my own drug of choices And now, twofold, not only am I doing my drug of choice, but I'm also using opioids. So all of these things really fast forward, again, the foundation and the bedrock of what I get to and my purpose today about carrying a message of hope to other people. Listen, if you're out there today, I don't care if you've relapsed 1,000 times. You are a person that needs love. You're a person that needs understanding. And you know something? You're welcome at Rockers in Recovery. If you are somebody that's out there that had long-term recovery and for whatever reason you injured yourself and they gave you painkillers and it started the cycle of addiction for you again, I totally understand that. I get it. Please don't hesitate. That's what we're here for, Rockers in Recovery. Reach out to us. The end result is that what I do today and how I act today and behave today is really based on what I've learned from my own history. I was sitting in a meeting last night. I'll tell you, it's funny. First came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I shouldn't have said that, but it is what it is. At a 12-step organization back in 1985. I was 18 years old. And I was at a young people's meeting. And I went to treatment. They sent me to treatment. And I said, when I got out of treatment, I said, this is not for me. These people just don't know how to use. This is not for me. So when you think about the fact that I've been around for 33 years, now do I have 33 years in recovery? No, but do I have a lot of experiences that I've experienced through that time frame? I can tell you everything not to do. I can tell you, don't get married in recovery. And in the first year, it don't work well. Don't get in a relationship. I mean, there's so many things and so many mistakes that I made, but this is what I came to find out was that through failure, I get to today be somebody different. Because if I take those failures and I use them as wisdom, I can grow. I can grow spiritually and I can grow in another direction. Now I need people around me and I have God in my life and he's kept me alive this far to be able to carry a message of hope. Now, how we do that? Again, it comes down to the Rockers in Recovery media part of this thing is about carrying a message of hope and getting people behind that message. May it be guys like Sam from Amethyst Recovery or Lyle from The Shores, Nick from Clearbrook. You know, these guys got behind me over the last couple of years and said, hey, listen, we're going to help you carry that message out there because that's what we want to do is to spread hope and spread the message that you can get clean, you can have a new life, you can be a rocker in recovery, you can go out and listen to music, you can hang out, you can have fun with your recovery. So that's
and there's always a place for you in the community.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. You know, nobody needs to be shunned or treated like crap. It's just, you know, you are love. You're a human being. Foremost, you're a human being. Everybody's like, I'm an addict. No, foremost, I am a human being. I'm a person in recovery, but I'm a human being first. And that's the most important thing that people, you know, miss that concept. You know, it's like we're subhuman because we have an addiction. No, we're human beings, being and trying to be the best person we can each day. If you're in recovery, you're not that way. I know personally, of course, from my own experiences, that I didn't wake up with a drink in one hand and a pipe in the other, saying, "Hey, listen, I'm going to be a great person today." I didn't have those behaviors, that's for sure.
So, John, how can our listeners support you? How can they be part of the Rockers in Recovery community?
Well, it's, you know, listen, the first thing is that how can we support the community? And how we can support the community is being able to put the position of our message out there. And that message is, again, giving hope. So that's right. The first thing. So how can we grow that even bigger? And the thing is that it's real simple to, you know, this is our full-time job. You know, this is what we do for a living. We're a media company. We're a for-profit media company. And just like if we were in a Miami Herald or the, you know, one of the major TV networks, they all do everything through sponsorship. The process of becoming a sponsor is real simple. You can go to rockersandrecovery.com and click on sponsorship, and you will literally see how you can become a sponsor. And we try to make that across the board as reasonable as possible, because what we're looking to do is each day keep that train running of hope. So that way we can keep the message going out there. Now, we have some great people. I just mentioned them, you know, Amethyst and the Clearbrook and the Shores and Hope and Grace Recovery Centers. These people have really stood behind us and helped us with the message. Now, the cool part about this is that because of our network growing the way it does, these guys are getting, you know, sometimes, you know, thousands of people, because they put aside all of the how many heads in the beds are going to be, you know, is this going to produce? And what it's done is that they get to, you know, also now get, thousands monthly of click-throughs to their website, finding out their information. Also, you know, we get to be able to put out information like the Music Cares and SAMHSA and other things, because it's not just about putting their stuff out. It's about putting out all kinds of information, but because of their sponsorship, we're able to do all of that stuff.
Right, right.
Make sense?
Right. And we're showing now some information regarding how to connect with Rockers in Recovery, and your website has different packages, different campaign links. So we definitely encourage folks to visit your website or to contact you directly via the email and phone number provided on the slides, and to find out some more information. And I think that you really have a great network from all of the analytics that you've provided to me, where you can really reach many people through different platforms, whether folks are listening to Waking Up Blessed or your weekend music events. It's really just a great opportunity to reach those folks that either as family members or individuals in recovery.
Well, and you know, something that's very cool that you say that, but you know, one of the things that I did just for giggles and ahas over the last 4 or 5 days was I took some of your information and I put it out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just to be able to see the response for an organization like yourself, and you know, you're more health related and all of that. And, you know, we were able to, you know, introduce your information to around 2,000 people over 4 days.
Over 4 days. That's great.
Mm-hmm. So the reality is that it's about all of us working together. But here's the problem that you run into. I have people call me up and, you know, hey, listen, we would love to do this campaign. And will you put this out there for us? And will you help us? And we're a business. We're a business. So there are certain people that, yes, we will help and we will put their information out there. But if you continue doing that, how do you keep the lights on?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it has to be a balance. And eventually, if you want to be able to help and be altruistic and help other people that have a message, maybe an advocacy message to an educational message that you want to help put out there, well, you need the funds to be able to put that stuff out there too. Mm-hmm. And there are real organizations out there that have no money, and you want to help support them. You need organizations that are willing to support your message foremost, so that way you can get their messages out too.
Right, right, right. Well, I think we have a few questions from our listeners that we want to go through. And, you know, I really thank you, John, for all of this. And we would love to have you back on for another webinar if you're interested. You know, we think that this is great. And I personally, you know, through all of our talks, absolutely support what you're doing and your message. And, you know, as a ACOA, I definitely see the struggles, not just of the individual, but the family. And I think that music has always been the great equalizer and also therapist in my life and in my family. So I think that this, you know, really aligns with my experience with addiction and addiction recovery. So I thank you again for making the time for us.
I want to thank you
yeah.
too. You know, here's, I'm going to be quite frank about this too. You know, there's a bunch of organizations out there now, media organizations. In Recovery Magazine started in 2012. There's a bunch of other media stuff out there. But one of the things that never occurred is I never had a person pick up the phone and call me and say, hey, listen, would you like to talk about Rockers in Recovery and be a part of our media? And maybe we collaborate and work back and forth. Never had it happen. And that's part of the problem that goes on in the recovery community. Everybody, you know, is, you know, working on their own agenda and having their own agenda. So nobody wants to collaborate because, listen, that might be, they might get more spotlight than we get, or are they, you know what I mean? It's just really, really nuts. So having you pick up the phone and call me and wanting to really hear my message and hear what it was all about was an honor. It was an honor. You made my day the day that you called and asked. And I want to thank you and your organization for asking me to be a part of this. I'm totally humbled, and most importantly, I'm so glad that we could really get to know each other and understand that, you know, it's you know, some of the stuff is, it can be fun doing and putting it together. And we've had some fun putting it together, and some really cool talks. So I thank you.